Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. You know, fishing is a favorite pastime for a lot of people here in Wisconsin, and we're going to talk to one of them today on the show, Scott Seymour, with us. He's been fishing and hunting in Wisconsin for over 50 years. He has put some of his adventures together in a new book. It's called Return to Familiar Waters. And in it, he talks about his love for the Menominee River and how this natural resource is under some threat. Well, I'm sure we'll get to that as well. But we'll talk about the book with him and hope you'll join in. Are you a fly fishing fan? You don't necessarily have to be a fly fishing fan to enjoy this book. I can tell you that for free. I enjoyed it very much, and I like to fish, but I fish more for muskies than I do for bass. He likes to fish bass. But no matter whether you're a fly fisher or not, I think you'll enjoy his book. What questions you have about fly fishing, maybe? What experiences do you want to share with your fishing? I hope you'll join in at 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234, or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Scott Seymour, welcome. Thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Larry. And I just have to say that after listening to your previous guest, I'm really regretting not having a successful deer hunt this year because I heard about some wonderful recipes in that last piece.
I tell you what, we had a lot of fun with Chef Joel. And as I was, when I read your book, I was thinking, oh my gosh, Scott and I have so much in common, right? Even to the fact that I lived on Lake Monona over by Olin Park. There's a dozen houses or so over there. And mine was kind of the third one from the creek with lots of glass windows facing the lake. We moved off of it, but fished on that lake a lot and caught quite a few muskie, as a matter of fact, and bass as well, but a lot of muskie, the biggest one right off that rock pile. You probably know what I'm talking about when I say the rock pile.
I have a very good idea where what you're describing there, Larry.
That was just under 50 incher right there on the rock, right on top of the rock pile.
So, I haven't yet been that fortunate to catch one that big.
So why did you decide to put your fishing stories and a few hunting stories in a book?
You know, I've had a passion for writing, in the outdoor genre for quite some time. I've written some articles for fly fishing magazines over the year. I published a book back in 2000 called From Field to Fly, which is really a how-to book about how to take the wild game in the field and convert it and make it appropriate for fly tying. And so I've always, enjoyed the passion of writing, but I started scratching out these stories, Larry, probably, 10, 12 years ago. A lot of great memories for me growing up fishing with my grandfather at a very young age in northeastern Wisconsin on the Menominee River. But then having the opportunity to meet a good friend of mine, Hugh Wabers in Madison, Wisconsin, who really turned me on to fly fishing when I got out of college. And that led to just some wonderful adventures throughout the state of Wisconsin and beyond. So that's really what prompted me to start writing these stories. And, my struggle always was, how do I end about all of these fishing stories? And, of course, you mentioned the Menominee River and the threats to the Menominee. It finally occurred to me that a lot of these stories took place in the Menominee, and this was an opportunity to get the word out about what was happening on that river.
Yeah, and we can definitely talk about some of that as we move along in the show. I want to give our listeners a chance to join in at 800-642-1234 or email us to ideas@wpr.org. Well, you and I have kind of been on about the same life track here, and I've got about as many years in as you have. And I'm thinking about all the stories I could. How did you pick the stories the ones for your book. I mean, some of them are funny. And some of them are scary. You know, one or two are kind of scary. What'd you do?
Well, you know, I really wanted to start by really talking about, my grandfather, who really got me into the sport at a very young age. I think all of us that love the outdoors probably have somebody in our lives that prompted us to get involved and took us out hunting or fishing. And certainly in my case, that was my grandfather, and he did that at a very young age. And he at times was a bit of a disciplinarian, but I think he also figured out that, if you put a young child in a boat and you show him how much fun something can be, like fishing, that it probably was going to take. And it certainly did with me. And as a result, I had the opportunity to spend a lot of time with him on the water. And then beyond that, some really what I think are some wonderful experiences over the years with my dad, good friends of mine, and others that I've had the privilege to spend some quality time with on the water over the years.
Yeah, I was thinking about your Grandpa Jack. My dad was kind of your Grandpa Jack for me. And I really thought a lot about my dad when I was reading the chapter. I think you called it Last Cast.
Yes.
And that's one of the kind of fun, nice things about your book. If you're anybody who's spent a lot of time or any time at all in the outdoors, reading about your story, it brings to mind, at least it did to me, so many of the stories of my own life. And I'm not even sure you have to be a fisher or a hunter to relate to that, because I think you could relate to that story, for example, about somebody in your life, even if it didn't involve the outdoors, but it's something else in some other fashion.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, he taught me a lot of different things, well beyond fishing, work ethic, the idea of, if you have a passion, pursuing it and pursuing it hard, and a lot of various life lessons that, really I have taken with me and have really served me well, not only out in the field, but, in my occupation as an attorney over the last 34 years.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, I had a big laugh in your one story, and I could relate to it because I was in a similar situation when you were duck hunting, and wound up getting ticketed by a warden. The same thing happened to me, but I was fishing at the time, and we both got out of it. Maybe just sort of give us the bare bones of that one so people know what we're talking about here.
Oh, yeah. I was fishing with my college roommate probably several years out of college, and we were on the Mississippi River, and we were hunting wood ducks in a pothole out in the middle of the Mississippi. And at the end of the day, he knew I was heading back to Madison, and I didn't have much to show for it, so he gave me his ducks. Well, another friend of ours brought the warden over in skiff, and the warden walked up to me and said, "Whose ducks are whose?" And I said, "Well, these are mine, those are his." And he said, "Well, these are two wood ducks, and you just shot at a wood duck before I came over here." And I said, "Well, you didn't ask me, who shot which ducks. You said, whose ducks are whose?" Well, he wasn't having any of it. And it was pretty clear somebody was going to get a ticket. And unfortunately, that day it was me. And we probably should have just swallowed hard, and I should have paid the ticket, but we decided to take it to court. And we had a comical trial down in Viroqua with fortunately a judge that had a sense of humor. And when I asked the warden when he was on the stand why he thought I'd, shot at a duck, and he actually cited me for wounding the duck and not making a good faith effort to look for it. When I asked him about that, he said, well, after you shot, the duck flew low through the woods. And I said, in your years of experience, is it unusual for wood ducks to fly through the woods? The judge laughed, and the long and short of it is he eventually dismissed the ticket and we got off. But we learned a few lessons in the process too, Larry.
Well, in my own case, it had to do with a fishing for muskies, and back when you couldn't have a trolling motor on, and we were while you were casting or retrieving a lure, and we weren't. But we saw another guy was dragging literally trolling with his motor. Anyway, we came in the evening, and the warden was waiting and wrote us up for that. And I said, we weren't doing that. And he said, well, there was a time or two when for a few seconds, someone, the lure was in the air and the motor was the trolling motor was on. And I said, there was a guy out there trolling, brazenly. And he said, and the warden said, well, maybe that's why somebody called in to complain. Maybe it was that other guy. But in the meantime, you're getting the ticket. So we took that one to court and got out of it too. There you go. Wow. I tell you what, our guest today, Scott Seymour, has got a fun book out, interesting book. It's called Return to Familiar Waters, A Fly Fisherman's Journey. I see Dick in Chicago is online. Dick, I hope you'll stay with us. And I hope you'll join in with your questions too. Join Dick. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Email us to ideas at WPR.org. We'll take a quick look at the news. We'll find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. And then we'll be back with Scott Seymour. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here talking with Scott Seymour about his new book. It's called Return to Familiar Waters, A Fly Fisherman's Journey Back to the Troubled River of His Youth. Great stories in it, including some stories about the Menominee River. He's fished the Menominee, probably knows it better than most anybody. And I hope you'll join in with your questions or comments. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us to ideas@WPR.org. Ideas@WPR.org. And some callers online with concerns about the Menominee. But I think before, and in a minute or two before, we have Dick and Dale are both on to talk about the Menominee and some of the troubled parts of it, but maybe you could tell us first about the Menominee River. It's kind of like a main character, so to speak, in your book. For those not familiar with it, where's it located? What's it like?
Yeah, absolutely, Larry. So it really is a beautiful river. There's sections of it where you can literally float the river all day and not see another person. And it really starts near Iron Mountain, Michigan. And it is the border water between northeastern Wisconsin and Michigan's Upper Peninsula. And it flows about 117 miles down to the mouth, which is located at Marinette, Wisconsin, Menominee, Michigan, where it empties into Lake Michigan. And what's unique about it, I think, is that it has areas of slow-moving water that exist between dams. It has rapids. It has waterfalls. It is, quite frankly, one of the most picturesque rivers that I've ever seen. And I've been to Montana, been to Colorado, been to Alaska, and it really is a unique resource in that sense. Really has some tremendous fishing. I hate to tell people that. And I know the guides that are on that river on a daily basis hate to talk about that as well. But given some of the threats, I think people are beginning to get more comfortable with the idea of letting people know how valuable a resource this is and why it's so important to protect it.
Yeah. Well, let's take some calls. Dick in Chicago, we'll go to you. Dick, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
I'm concerned about the protection of the Menominee River. It's being threatened by a proposed metallic sulfide mine, which would be located about 45 river miles upstream of the mouth of it. If this happens, this part of the river is going to be damaged or destroyed, and Lake Michigan will also be damaged. There's no reason for this to happen there. This area needs to be protected, and we need everybody's help. So contact the Wisconsin DNR and the Michigan Department of Environment, Great Lakes, and Energy, and tell them not to allow this to happen. That's my concerns there.
Dick, thank you so much. And you know what? I'm going to jump right to Dale in Marinette because as a kind of a follow-up, and then you and I can talk some more about the Menominee. Dale, join in.
Hey, good day. This is Dale Burry, and I am the founder of the Coalition to Save the Menominee River. And first of all, I want to thank Scott Seymour and his book for helping educate the general public on the plight of the Menominee River and the threat of sulfide mining. This is indeed a world-class smallmouth bass and walleye fishery, besides the major breeding grounds for the historic sturgeon, which are, they live to be 100 years old. They're massive fish. And this is where it all happens, on the Menominee River.
That's right.
And we're so grateful to Scott to include that in his book because we're all living under the threat of sulfide mining right now, being leased mineral leases in the state of Michigan that are on their desks right now. So we're all fighting that fight, and we really appreciate you having Scott on your show. He's a remarkable resource, and his book, you mentioned you don't have to be a fisherman to read Scott's book. And you know, that is true. You can read the book and each chapter is a story in itself, and it's a great reading. He's a phenomenal writer and very descriptive. So we enjoy his book immensely. So thank you for the opportunity to speak with you folks.
Dale, thank you so much. And let's talk a bit more. That last chapter is, it's a well-reasoned and researched chapter on this whole situation. And maybe talk some more about it with us, Scott.
Yeah, it's, it really is an opportunity, I felt, to really educate folks, as Dale said, about the river, a little bit about the history. And what's happened, over time with that river in terms of, the jobs it's created, some of the harm that's come to the river through, paper mill practices, things like that. And yet it's amazing resilience and ability to bounce back and still continue to be, just a wonderful fishery. I think the other thing that I think I get into a little bit more detail on is really raising some public policy questions around some things that I've learned as I've researched this issue. Many don't know that the EPA delegated much of its authority to the state of Michigan, which is a little disconcerting. It was a surprise to me that the EPA could do that with some of these water issues, especially on interstate waters like the Menominee River, which essentially, have two states that border it and one state making decisions about what they want to allow on their side of the river that can have an impact on the residents of another state who seemingly don't have a voice in what happens to that river even though they will suffer the consequences in the event of acid drainage, which is almost inevitable with the types of mine that, at least up to this point, that Aquila has proposed.
Yeah, and the approach that that they're taking, the company itself seems to be, as I read in your book, their idea of how to keep the tailings or whatever out of the Menominee River don't seem to match up with reality.
Yeah, and it it's interesting because most recently they actually have withdrawn their what had been their plan for this mine. I think most felt and thought that when a judge in Michigan had invalidated one of the permits that they were going to give up. But what they've shared is that they're going to file a new plan. What I recall is that they're going to abandon this upstream design for this tailings pond, but we don't know what they're going to propose. And quite frankly, I'm not sure that I have a lot of confidence that this particular company is going to come up with a proposal that's going to safeguard the river, given some of the filings that they've made, for example, where they denied that there was going to be an underground mine, and yet they're now claiming that with this new proposal, there will be an underground mine, which will increase the scope and scale of this mine. Even though they've been telling investors, quite frankly, that that they weren't going to, that an underground mine wasn't part of the plan, that it was going to remain an open pit mine. So I'm not sure that there's a high degree of confidence that they're going to come up with something that's going to safeguard a lot of the concerns that people have about polluting the river.
You know, I'm wondering what's happened. You published this earlier in the year, and for a variety of reasons, we weren't able to get you on any earlier than this. And I'm wondering, has anything happened, or what's been your experience since the book has been published relating to the?
I mean, as I said, Larry, there have been some positive developments. Some, as I mentioned, this judge in Michigan invalidated one of the wetlands permits that was required in order to begin construction of the mine. That led them to, rather than appeal and maybe face another defeat, they withdrew that permit. And then shortly thereafter, they actually withdrew the current plan. And as I said, they're now indicating that they're going to file a new plan that could actually be larger in scope and size than the original plan. The other development since the book was published is a company out of Colorado named Gold Resources Corporation has basically announced that it intends to acquire Aquila, which is the company that was going to build the mine originally. And I think it's no secret that Aquila probably was having some challenges from a financial standpoint. And one concern is that this Gold Resources likely has a little bit stronger balance sheet than Aquila did. So they may have more funds to pump into this effort.
If it's my belief that all the profits from your book, by the way, will go to help fight for the river, and a number of organizations involved in that.
That's correct. Yeah, I have pledged to donate the proceeds from the book, and have been fortunate enough to send Dale and his great organization, the Coalition to Save the Menominee, some funds over the course of the summer, thanks to folks who have purchased the book. So hoping more do so that we can continue to get the funds that are needed by the coalition to hire experts and lawyers to continue to carry on this fight.
Let's talk some more about the river itself and your writing about the river. Jill Nadeau, my producer, said one of her favorite stories, and it was one of mine too, was the first time you went over Quiver Falls and you didn't even know it at the time. So set the stage. Talk about you kind of mentioned in passing that there were some rapids and so forth, but talk a little bit more about Quiver Falls as an example.
Yeah, so my good friend Hugh from Madison, he and I have had a lot of adventures both out west and particularly on the Menominee River, and we decided we were going to expand our reach in terms of some of the places that we'd fished on the Menominee, and we scoped out this area that included Quiver Falls, and our intention was to portage around it, but we made a wrong turn and found ourselves facing a canyon that we couldn't escape, and came to the realization that we had to go down this series of falls in an open bow canoe with a lot of expensive fishing gear on board. And of course, it scared the daylights out of me. He fortunately had done a fair amount of whitewater canoeing when he was younger, so he was much calmer than I was. And it convinced me that we could traverse these series of drops, and somehow miraculously, despite my incompetence, we were able to make our way through it without losing any gear. And it scared both of us enough that a few years later, I decided to buy a Western style drift boat so that we weren't going to risk our lives going through this section of the river. And now we go through it every year, and it still gets my heart pumping, but we do it without risk of life or limb.
I love the you were kind of in the front of the boat and he was in the back. He was in the back of the boat and he was shouting instructions and you were trying to follow them as closely as you possibly could.
Yeah, and not doing a bang up job of it either.
Oh my goodness me! And you mentioned the drift boat, and we don't see drift boats. Well, at least I don't see them here in Wisconsin, and I'm sure a lot of people aren't familiar with them. So, talk about what it looks like and kind of what it's used for.
Yeah, so they were originally designed out west, and designed for going through rapids without taking on water. And I would describe it as kind of the shape of a banana. The idea being that the front end of this boat with kind of this upward bow allows you to kind of move through the water and part the waves without taking the water on. And so there's a rower in the middle of this boat and then casting stations so that fly fishers can stand up on the front end and the back end of the boat and fish comfortably through the rapids. It's just a really an ideal way to fish fast rivers where you want to slow things down easily and stay with the pace of the water so that fly fishermen can cast their flies along the shoreline. And I'd just add that there's a company called Tightlines out of De Pere. They've done a lot to support the efforts to fight the mine, and these are some of the best smallmouth guides I think in the country who are on that river on a daily basis throughout the summer, who probably know that river better than anyone. And if someone wants to get in a drift boat and try fishing out of a drift boat, fly fishing, those are the guys to contact for sure.
Yeah. If you're not a fly fisherman, would they take you anyway?
You might have to pay more. But.
and the drift, are they heavy? Are these boats heavy?
Yeah, my boat is about 400 pounds. But what's really interesting is it's got a flat bottom. It has these upturned bow and stern, but they are really easy to maneuver in whitewater. I can literally stop my boat in white water and move it from side to side, just by rowing the oars hard enough to slow it down or even back it up if need be.
Man, oh man, oh man. Well, they look like really cool boats. I thought I got to try that sometime. And back to the stories. Do you have a story that you kind of is a favorite story in your collection of stories? I'm sure your last story is about the Menominee is it's a favorite in one sense, but not in another. I guess I would say. But do you have a favorite?
Well, yeah, I do. You might appreciate this one, Larry, being a muskie fisherman. I had a good friend of mine who lost his wife to cancer a number of years ago. And on the anniversary, on his anniversary with his wife, my wife knew that it was their anniversary. And she had suggested, why don't you take this friend of mine out for a day of fishing on Lake Wingra? So I picked him up in my drift boat. And we rode across the lake, and literally on his second cast, he hooked a sizable muskie. Neither one of us had ever caught one on a fly rod before, and somehow we were able to land it. And as we're floating around in the lake talking about how lucky we were, I finally turned to Jim and I said, I don't think it was luck. I think your wife sent that yeah. fish on your anniversary. So I think that's... one of my favorite stories in the book.
Yeah, I guess I would have to agree with you. I thought it was a wonderful story. And Vivian in Green Bay has. Maybe we'll get her on. For Vivian, do you have a quick comment for us?
Yep. 55 years of acquaintance with the Menominee in the 60 Islands area. Owned a cabin there. My second husband was from Jersey City, New Jersey. First time I took him up to the river, he just looked at it as a black, foreboding stretch of water. And then he caught his first walleye. And his life was forever changed. He was totally Wisconsin lumberjack fisherman, bachelor fishing weekends. Unfortunately, he passed away 20 years ago. I was able to hold the cabin for another 16 years after that, but it breaks my heart not to go there anymore.
Vivian, thank you for calling. Scott, comment?
Yeah, I know exactly how she feels because I don't know what I'd do if I didn't have my folks' place on the river. On Moscano Island to go to whenever the mood strikes me. So I own some property there. It's vacant sitting next to my folks' place, but it would be hard not to have that place to return to from time to time as much as I can.
And Vivian, even if you don't have that place to go back to, you should still go. There are places where you can stay on the river, and you should go. Again, I could hear the sort of that not agony, but the feelings in your voice for that. And I hope you do that. I hope you take me up on that. Go visit the Menominee again. And speaking of visiting, I hope Scott, you and I have a chance to visit again. It's been a real pleasure talking with you today about. Return to familiar waters, and I hope you sell a lot of books. Thank you so much for being with us today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Larry. Really enjoyed it.
Scott Seymour is the author of Return to Familiar Waters. That's the main title, subtitle, A Fly Fisherman's Journey Back to the Troubled River of His Youth. I really appreciate him being with us today, and he's got a wonderful book there. Well, looking tomorrow, John Freiberger's back to talk about problems condensation can cause in your home and how to prevent them. So we'll look forward to that. In the meantime, thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.